I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Jonathan Cedar, co-founder of BioLite, a company that produces clean, portable stoves for cooking off the grid in developing countries as well as for camping. The stove reduces toxic smoke emissions by 90% by using its own heat waste to generate energy. BioLite is targeting a global public health challenge of smoke pollution caused by cooking over an open fire. According to the World Health Organization, more than 7 million people die annually from smoke originating from open cooking fires. A USB port on the stove can also charge a cell phone or other portable device, which is useful to the more than 1 billion people who own cell phones but lack electricity. Jonathan graduated from Dartmouth College. Welcome.
Thank you.
How does the BioLite stove work?
Sure. So the BioLite stove is a wood-burning stove that recaptures the waste heat and turns that heat into electricity using a technology called thermoelectrics. Thermoelectrics are kind of like solar panels for heat instead of light. And we take that electricity and use it, essentially cause the smoke to reburn.
So how much smoke is the stove actually generating? If I'm looking at a stove and it's burning, am I seeing smoke?
If you see a car driving down the street and there's smoke coming out of the tailpipe, you would say to yourself, that's a badly tuned car. And if you look at an open fire or any sort of wood fire and there's smoke coming out of it, it's the same exact thing. It's a badly tuned fire. What we're able to do with our technology is take that 10% of really nasty stuff and turn it to 1% of really nasty stuff.
You mentioned wood is used to fuel or to start these fires of these stoves. What else can you put in these stoves?
Obviously wood, but also agricultural residues, so, crop waste, corn stalks, that kind of thing, cow dung as well, dried cow dung.
Prior to starting BioLite, you worked at a firm or a company called Smart Design, which helped companies like OXO, which sells kitchen appliances, or Staples, to create innovative products. And it was there that you came up with the idea for a camping stove with your co-founder, Alex Drummond. You worked on this for more than 3 years before you even incorporated as sort of a side project. Did you have sort of an aha moment where you finally got this technology right, or was it more of a gradual process?
No, there was definitely an aha moment. So the project started nights and weekends, and it was really Alex's initial idea. His brother had given him a small wood-burning can with a battery-powered fan on the bottom of it. Alec and I are both pretty avid outdoor folk and campers, and this seemed like a great alternative to bringing those nasty petrol cans out on the trail. And there was this one aha moment in Alec's industrial loft in Dumbo, Brooklyn, where we had built this funny little bent sheet metal thing. I remember us sitting in his loft, and it's smoking, and it's not lighting, and it's not generating electricity, and, we're really scratching our heads, and Alex's poor wife and daughter are, choking in the other room on all the smoke we're making. And I can't remember which one of us, but one of us realizes that the wires were disconnected, and we touch the wires, and all of a sudden this smoky mess turns into this purple mushroom of clean fire, and, we did this sort of inventor's high five dance, and from there, I think we knew we were onto something.
This idea started off as a stove for camping, given your enthusiasm for the outdoors. At what point did you realize, this market could be a lot larger if we address the need in developing countries?
Yeah, so after about 3 years of nights and weekends tinkering, we had what we called a looks-like-works-like prototype, right? So something that really demonstrated the potential in what we were working on. And we took it to an advanced wood combustion conference, if you believe that exists, in Seattle, and two very unexpected things happened there. One,
this is the Ethos Conference?
This is the Ethos Conference. One, Alec and I were introduced to the fact that half the planet is still cooking on smoky open fires, and that those fires kill more people than HIV and TB and malaria combined. And two, we entered our funny little prototype into their clean stove contest, which they have every year. And we won the cleanest stove of the year, and we were the only stove that wasn't plugged into an electric wall outlet to achieve those levels of emissions. And so it was this incredible confluence of, wow, this really is an important problem, combined with we have a very unusual and promising solution that this industry had not seen before.
You mentioned it was at the conference that, you learned the global scope of this problem. And here you are, a kid from Manhattan and Scarsdale, so you didn't necessarily have much exposure to the developing world prior to this. Is that right?
No. I mean, prior to this, I had been to India once as a tourist. I had seen people cooking on open fires, but quite frankly, I had never imagined that such a prevalent practice was at the root of so much suffering.
I remember my husband and I, we were in Jordan in the Middle East in the Wadi Rum Desert, and we were sleeping in a very large tent one night with these Jordanian Bedouins, and they cooked dinner using an open flame, but that fire was actually inside the tent. Mm-hmm. And my husband, whenever we think about that trip, he's always like, yes, do you remember that night where I couldn't sleep from the smoke pollution? Is it just an education issue that people don't realize that the smoke is so bad for them? Why build the fire inside the tent, for example, versus outside the tent? You've seen that too?
Absolutely. I mean, this is how half the planet is cooking. Specifically, why inside the home? Convenience. Right? Protection, safety, comfort. It's very hard to tell people how to live their lives differently. I think the best thing that we can offer is ways to participate in existing practices and make them safer and more convenient.
I'm Jessica Harris. You're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Jonathan Cedar, co-founder of BioLite, a company that produces clean biomass-powered stoves that allow clean cooking and electricity access in more than 70 countries internationally. So going back to the early days, once you decided to focus on both camping stoves and stoves in the developing world, how did you go about convincing retailers to adopt these stoves? Were there one or two that were key in this acceptance?
So in 2009, I left Smart Design to go refine the business models and raise venture capital. And I moved out to Berkeley partly to work with development economists and people focused on this issue of indoor air pollution. It turned out to be a very serendipitous time to be in that sector. In early 2010, Hillary Clinton launched the Global Alliance for Clean Cookstoves and used our technology as an example of innovation in the sector. So there was really this burgeoning interest. The U.S. State Department became interested in clean cooking and started to put some funding towards it. And so it was a very fertile time to be starting this business.
Accidentally. The timing worked out well.
Completely accidentally. I also spent about half of that year living in India as part of a social enterprise incubator called Dasra, where I was the only American company. It was me and 24 other Indian social enterprises, and it was a wonderful education. I understand campers. I shop at REI. I go camping on weekends. I don't understand what it's like to, or at least certainly at the time I didn't, understand what it was like to cook in a village, to buy things in a village, to deliver things to a village. So those two experiences combined really helped me refine what the business model was to a point where we could take this thing that sounded kind of crazy initially and actually put some venture capital behind it.
One of your early investors is Clayton Christensen, who is the author of Innovator's Dilemma. He's a professor at Harvard Business School. In a way, you are living that Innovator's Dilemma because you have these large incumbents who could produce these stoves, but just the infrastructure and the inertia and the entrenchment of these companies just causes them not to focus on this, whereas you don't have that burden.
I think that's right. I do think when we've seen larger companies like BP, like Philips come to the market, they bring all of the baggage and history from where they're coming from. And so if you look at BP, for example, when they tried to solve the cook stove problem in India, they said, great, we'll be a fuel company, right? So we'll sell these stoves at subsidized rates at a loss. And then we will, through selling biomass pellets, pay the stoves off over time. Well, turns out BP is very good at selling gasoline. BP is not very good at sourcing agricultural waste from 1,000 smallholder farms, turning those into pellets and moving moving those out through a rural distribution channel. And that's nothing wrong with BP. That's an incredibly hard thing to do. But we weren't burdened with those kinds of presumptions coming into our market.
What were some barriers in the cultural arena that you didn't foresee?
Sure. Oftentimes, one of the biggest barriers to women adopting clean cook stoves is that it's not valuable to their husbands. You know, men are typically controlling the finances of these households. This is an expensive product. Like, there's no two ways around that.
So is it roughly $40 a stove?
Yeah, that's about right.
And these are people who are making $2 a day, or varies?
It's a very wide spectrum, but I would say from $2 to $10 a day. But what we have very interestingly found is that the fact that our stoves generate electricity engages men in the cook stove question in ways that men never have before. And it's very funny. If you look at our village demonstrations, there are typically more men in the circle than women, and that is unusual for a cook stove.
Because of that USB connection to their cell phones.
That's right.
What about the smoke? I mean, we instinctively say, oh, yeah, smoke is a bad thing. But what is the reaction of these people who don't see much smoke coming out of the stoves?
Well, my favorite quote that I've heard a number of times in the villages is, well, where did you put the smoke? The conversation isn't so much this is going to change your health over a 20-year time horizon. That's not really what's compelling. What's compelling is I can save you time. I can save how much fuel you're using. I can keep your eyes from watering while you're cooking. I can keep your house cleaner, right? A sooty wall is the sign of a less developed household, that we can really provide these aspirational qualities, which are the same reasons you and I purchase 90% of the things that we buy.
Fashion.
Right. Fashion. Well, yet, fashion and function and convenience.
What is some pushback that you've witnessed? For instance, in Myanmar, some people said that the stove was too small. It seemed like a toy.
Well, so this was interesting. That was a test that we ran in 2009. We said, great, we can use this camp stove to solve a huge world problem. And so the first thing we heard was, well, I'm not going to break my twigs up into a million little pieces, and this doesn't cook for a family of eight. And I think that's when we started to understand, okay, it might be one technology, but it's not one product.
Because the stove was too small for a family of eight.
It was too small, and it didn't cook with the wood that they cooked on.
And how about between countries? So while you ultimately might have gotten a cultural acceptance in Myanmar with a bigger stove, why might it not work in India?
So there were certain things that needed to be different, right? So in India, it needed to cook chapati well, which is a thin flatbread that gets cooked on this kind of conical dish called a tava. And we found for a while that our flames were too concentrated in the center, and so they would burn the chapati, and we needed to find ways to diffuse the flame better. In Ghana, the staple food is called banku, and it's this very glutinous, starchy thing that you stir with a huge, heavy stick, and they actually use bent rebar that they stand on to hold the pots from tipping over while they cook. And so we needed to make sure that our stoves could work with that. But what we've actually found is that by and large, our stoves work fairly well for most of what you would have normally done over an open fire. People warned us that, you need a different stove for every community, and that's not what we found. And, I think it's unsurprising that it's not what we found, because if you look at what most people in these communities aspire to use, it's LPG, liquefied petroleum gas, so, gas. And gas burners look about the same everywhere you go, and anyone who has enough money and lives in a place where that's accessible uses that.
I want to go from Ghana to Washington Square Park in New York City. There was an introduction to the public of your stoves after Hurricane Sandy. How helpful was that with the PR and raising awareness of what you were doing? And,
sure.
And what did you do?
I was actually stuck. I was stuck in Seattle. I was planning our launch with REI, and a couple of our engineers took it upon themselves to take a bunch of inventory out of the office and set up tables in Washington Square Park and then in front of City Hall and then out in the Rockaways and make people tea and charge their cell phones. And it was really interesting. Even in a city with as modern an infrastructure as New York, we realize how vulnerable we are and how dependent. And the biggest pain point that people found was that they couldn't charge their cell phones and tell their loved ones that everything was okay. with a device as small as ours, you were able to cross that kind of minimum energy threshold.
You mentioned REI. It's an outdoor camping store. How important was REI in all of this?
REI has been a phenomenal partner for us. So they came to us at about the same time we launched online in 2012 and said, we want to launch you guys at retail. And we spent close to a year planning what became the biggest stove launch they've ever had.
I want to talk about your personal life for a minute. You live in Brooklyn.
I do.
In fact, you ski to work sometimes.
I did cross-country ski to work one day this winter. It was definitely the best day of my winter. If it was up to me, it would be winter all the time. It's a little bit weird running an outdoor company here in New York City, but I've always been passionate about the outdoors. I went to college in New Hampshire and worked as an outdoor educator for a couple of years after college.
On a ship, you spent a year as an engineer and a teacher where you taught navigation skills, basically, operation skills on a 135-foot ship.
Yeah. So after college, I was recruited to be the engineer for an oceanographic research program that ran 150-foot ships across oceans, running the engineering facilities of the ship. So the propulsion engines, the refrigeration, the electrical generation, the water makers.
Now, did you have an interest in the sea? Here you were, a kid from the suburbs, or was it kind of incidental that it happened to be the sea? It could have been trains.
No, I really loved sailing little tiny dinghies as a kid on a lake near where my grandparents spent a lot of time.
What do your parents do?
My mom is a pediatrician and my dad is a corporate lawyer.
Were you always tinkering as a kid?
Yeah, I drove my parents nuts. I broke everything in our house trying to fix it. But growing up, my uncle would give me tools for every birthday. So, socket drivers and all this stuff. And I'd go out to his house and he'd allow me to strap the leaf blower to the skateboard and buzz up and down the street. So, yeah, I was always very mechanically curious.
David Kelly is kind of a grandfather in the product design innovation world. He started a company called IDEO and the Stanford D School. In what way was he influential for you?
I was bobbing around the Sargasso Sea and randomly pulled his book, The Art of Innovation, off of the small library that we had and started reading it. And
on this 150-foot ship?
On this 150-foot ship.
Okay.
It's a closet with some books in it.
Mm-hmm.
Started reading the book, and I think I was about 25 pages in when I started writing my application to become an intern at Smart Design.
You also play the banjo. Did you bring your banjo as you travel the world?
I did. I had my banjo at sea with me, and I have a mini banjo that I oftentimes take with me when I travel in India or Africa, and it makes for nice conversation.
Do you play the banjo while you're pedaling your stoves?
No, but that might be next year's marketing plan.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Jonathan Cedar, co-founder of BioLite. If you would like to learn more about the show, please visit our website at fromscratchradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jess G. Harris or find us on Facebook. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. Jack, you're free, you're gone.